Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 53 of Own the Road with Auto Trader, where we make car stuff simple for Canadians. My name is Jody Lai, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Auto Trader.
And I am Dan Alika. I am Auto Trader's road test editor. That was a hell of a flourish. I think that was the most, like, you know, extravagant, vivacious version of your introduction.
I like vivacious. Yeah. Like so, our you know friend Barish.
Barish. Auto Trader's data genius, as you like to call him.
And Turkish Delight.
And Turkish Delight. He's a very vivacious man.
I had to change the way I do the hand because I usually use my left hand, but now we have mics here, so I have to do it this way.
Maybe that's why it kind of threw you off, but I liked it. It was good energy.
Okay, I'll try to put more vivaciousness into my introductions from now on.
It was good.
Thank you.
You know what needs more vivaciousness?
Tell me.
Apple CarPlay. Wireless Apple
CarPlay. Oh, boom. Okay, so today we are talking about in-car tech. And the whole purpose of tech is to make things more convenient for us. But oftentimes we find that, you know, there's growing pains with a lot of the tech that we see. And we end up getting so frustrated because it's completely messing us up. It doesn't work. It's glitchy. And Dan recently had a really frustrating experience.
Yeah. So I was driving the Toyota RAV4 Prime. And, you know, usually, I mean, it's a RAV4, right? Like there's a reason Toyota sells so many. It's generally a seamless experience, very user-friendly, nothing crazy, no huge learning curve. Like, you just get in and go.
It's very straightforward.
And that's still very true in 2024. But with wireless Apple CarPlay, the integration is just so bad. And this is not limited to the RAV4. This is across the industry. For whatever reason, when wireless CarPlay was introduced, it just, you know, went straight into like trash territory. It went from working for like a minute or two to just like every time, one day you have connectivity issues, the next day you don't. One day Google Maps doesn't work, the next day it does. And this is like Carl Bonner, our VP at Auto Trader. He has this in his Lexus.
Right.
That they have. He has a Lexus NX and it's nothing but trouble. They just picked up a Toyota Grand Highlander. No issues at all. And this is one of those things where I understand, you know, like that phones and everything, like there are lots of factors here, but it's like my software is always up to date. My phone is like fairly new. It's a few years old now, but not that old that that I should be having these kind of problems. And the bigger problem is the inconsistency of it.
Right.
And this is supposed to be the technology that keeps your phone out of your hands. And I still just leave it. I just get angry and, you know, but it's in the glove box or, you know, on the wireless charger, whatever the case may be. But this is one of those examples where somebody is going to go, well, my CarPlay isn't working, so I'm just going to pick up my phone and text or make a phone call. And it defeats the purpose of it.
Even just for navigation, I can imagine like your intentions being totally fine. But like if you're like me and you don't know where you're going ever, like you need that map.
It is so, and the craziest part with the Google Maps thing. So this is only, I haven't looked, I'm sure there are people complaining about this on Reddit and different forums and stuff like that. But it is unique to wireless Apple CarPlay. Okay.
If you plug it in, does it still?
No.
Okay.
So if it's a vehicle that has that ability where you can plug it in and it'll run wired CarPlay, not all vehicles can do that, right? Because of the infotainment, right, like the hardware itself. But if you plug in and don't have your Wi-Fi on and it goes hardwired, then it'll be fine. Connecting wirelessly, I would say probably 60%+ of the time, the only way to have it work properly is to have not just Google Maps open on my phone, but also have the screen unlocked. Otherwise, it won't track my movement on. So you punch in a destination and then you look at Google Maps on the infotainment screen and it thinks you're still at your starting point. Meanwhile, so this happens all the time. It's happened to me on road trips.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't understand what's going on here. This is simple stuff.
That's crazy to me. I wonder if that's like an Apple problem
for sure,
and not necessarily a Toyota problem.
I mean, okay, I'm sure there'll, you know, they're both parties are to blame,
right,
let's say, but this to me, it strikes me as an Apple issue.
That's so annoying.
And it's just like,
For something that you have to interact with literally every single time you drive, it needs to work.
And then the other side of it too is like automakers that are signing up. I don't remember what the percentage is now of iPhone users versus Android users, but I'm pretty sure iPhone is still like the majority of people. And you have automakers like GM and Volvo that are going away from Apple CarPlay in general to use this, whatever they call it, Android Automotive, yeah. I think it is. And they're now, granted, I have had great success with it. I know you have not had great success with Volvo's implementation of
it's Android spotty. Automotive. It's very inconsistent.
Like our contributor, Jeff Wilson, has complaints all the time. And I have seen it happen to other people, but I haven't experienced this. But when I have issues with wireless Apple CarPlay, I'm like, good riddance. I don't care because clearly they can't implement it properly. But I do have concerns with these automakers that are signing up, you know, if an automaker had never implemented Apple CarPlay to begin with and went all in on Android Automotive, I could understand signing some sort of deal with Google. But to give the people what they want, so to speak, and that's a way to mirror their phone in their car,
right,
and then take it away.
Well, a lot of these new Google-based infotainment softwares are actually compatible with Apple CarPlay. They are, but they don't have Android Auto.
I'm saying like the new, so like GM has openly said the Android Automotive experience, you will no longer have, that's part of the agreement with Google.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. The thing about the Google-based infotainment system is that I understand that, like, everyone knows how to use Google. So from, like, a usability standpoint, it's got to be pretty easy, right? My issue is that now you have to, A, be connected,
yeah.
B, have an account and log in, and I hate that.
Yeah, same.
I just don't think you should have to do that to use your car.
Yeah, it's really, and, you know, we're talking about, yes, convenience features here, like, you know, the smartphone mirroring and stuff, but again, our perspective, both of us share this outlook that it is a safety related thing because it means that people are going to be less prone to pick up their phones mm-hmm. when they're behind the wheel. That's what I would like to see. That's what a successful implementation does. But when it's unsuccessful, it defeats the purpose. But then we can also talk about advanced safety tech. This is another big sticking point, an area where flawed execution means people shut it off. I've talked about this before. People, you know, turn off an overly sensitive forward collision warning system, and then it's not there in that situation that you saw, that you described. Imagine that work van that rear-ended that vehicle had forward collision warning.
And automatic emergency braking.
Exactly. Yeah. So to have that stuff is great. It has your back, but when it's overly sensitive and you just get annoyed with it and shut it off.
And that's happened lots of times to me. I think I was driving a Jeep and they had a really sensitive reverse automatic emergency braking. And I park, my parking space is next to a post. Mm-hmm. It's just always there. It's a big concrete post.
Yeah.
It saw that as an obstacle, slammed on the brakes, scared the crap out of me because it made me feel like I had actually hit something, which I hadn't.
It's very jarring.
And at that point, I was like, I'm just turning this off. Because there were too many false triggers,
exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. And we're seeing more and more of that. I've talked about this with like steering assistance, right? There are some well-done systems out there, and like Ford's Blue Cruise, GM Super Cruise, I find, and those are hands-free highway driving assistance. So on certain stretches, I'm talking long stretches, like there's hundreds of thousands of kilometers of divided highways, but that's the key. It only works on mapped divided highways in North America. I find both of those systems are excellent.
They're
Hyundai
great.
And Kia, not as good.
So my problem with a lot of these steering assistants is that they're too sensitive, or you're trying to make a correction and it fights you.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, well, I think I know what I'm doing, and it's clear that I'm in control. Like, if it's obvious that someone's out of control and they might need that assistance, like, go for it. But there should be, the systems have to get better at knowing, like, what I'm doing is intentional versus like I've fallen asleep or something.
And Kia and Hyundai's highway driving assist too. So that's the one that can do automated lane changes. So you activate your signal on the high. Again, it's pre-mapped stretches of divided highway, activate your signal, and it will automate the lane change for you. Not only is it very delayed, like compared to Super Cruise, if it detects the slightest, I'm talking like you move your hand on the wheel, it'll cancel the automated lane change. To me, what's the point? Once again, this is an example of poorly implemented technology. It's poorly executed, because then I've complained about this in reviews. Then you try to feather the wheel, and I would rather not use these systems, but I test them out so I can tell you guys about them. And then I try to like feather the wheel, and it'll cancel it because it says you're not in control. So it's like, guys, come on, either implement it or don't.
I mean, I think these are growing pains, because all of this tech is relatively new,
for sure,
right? And
yeah.
So I think with every iteration, they're getting smarter. They're ironing out all of those annoying things that happen. And it's important to remember that, like, these systems are here. They're supposed to help us. But when they end up getting in the way, that just becomes another safety issue. Yeah.
And this is all of this stuff. The irony, too, is that all of this stuff, whether it's, you know, lane keeping and highway driving assist, whether it's Apple CarPlay, these, you know, elements impact the J.D. Power initial quality scores that automakers covet.
Can you explain to everyone what that survey means and how they do it?
So when you, not all automakers, but most have opted into this where, you know, the J.D. Power just does like these automotive surveys where they get permission to send a questionnaire via email. Now, of course, as a shopper, as a buyer, you can opt out of these. But if you receive that and you opt in, you take this questionnaire, chance to win a gift card, whatever the incentive is, and then J.D. Power compiles all the data. The initial quality study is a 90-day study. So it takes the first, you get this survey, this questionnaire, 90 days after you bought your vehicle. And it asks you questions about the quality, the initial quality, hence the name. But being unable to connect your phone will impact the score the same way as if you're like, my power tailgate stopped working.
Yeah, so they're not weighted differently.
Some of the scores are, but not all of them. Not enough that, so a vehicle could fail, could have a poor showing, or an automaker could have a poor showing because of this wireless Apple CarPlay issue.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that to me, so you have, that's why you see such fluctuation. That's why I hate, and we've kind of stopped at Auto Trader, we've stopped reporting on these, on the results as much. Like, that used to be such a sexy headline. Every publication would do it. But the reason you see these crazy fluctuations is because all it takes is one year to the next, some vehicle that's really handled with care. You know, Porsche tends to do well because the quality is good as far as, like, you know, fit and finish.
Right.
Especially compared to a brand like Tesla. But the reason why you see these crazy fluctuations is because a bad year of implementation of technology can absolutely decimate those scores.
Yeah, like if someone had a glitchy infotainment system within their first 90 days, that will be a massive loss for their scores,
totally.
Right?
And if you look, listen, this is sort of, let's call this an educated guess. There's a reason why you tend to see brands like Buick, Cadillac, certain models like the Subaru Legacy compared to the rest of the Subaru lineup that rank lower. It's because old people buy them. And old, I'm telling you right now.
No, that actually makes a lot of sense, because it's harder to get used to all that new tech.
Yeah, old people tend to struggle with the technology, and when they get frustrated, and Toyota is going to be a good example of this subscription-based navigation, right? If you don't have that subscription, but every time you click on that icon,
it prompts
it just
you to
get started, and it's frustrating. It's annoying. And as an old person, if you see that and go, my car has navigation, but it won't work.
Right.
That dings the score. And I don't care. I'm not saying, oh, poor automakers, because to me it's silly anyways. But the point being that should not have the kind of impact that it does. You know, whether it actually works or not matters, because if it's a matter of you just couldn't figure out how to connect your device, right? Or even though you follow the prompts, if you don't turn on Wi-Fi, it won't connect wirelessly.
Yeah. these simple things, and like for us, it's a little bit different because we hop into a different car every single week. But what I'm noticing more and more in these new cars that we review is that it will prompt you to log into your account. And I don't have an account for all these new cars and I never log in. But it is so frustrating to me when I get that prompt every single time and I can't access anything until I acknowledge that it's there.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I'm an old person because I hate
No, I think that's fair. Like, in our use case is very unique, right? Because we're switching into these cars. And a big reason why automakers are a little gun shy with having a lot, like, you know, sometimes they will have a press login. So it's like, you know, some generic email address that's registered to the company and they give us the password and the little, you know, key code. But the problem is when you have 30 journalists that cycle into these vehicles, you don't know who still has access. Like, I delete vehicles when there's a companion app and I register that vehicle in my app, I delete it right away. I've heard stories of other journalists that don't and think it's funny to lock and unlock the doors, set off the alarm, whatever. And that to me kind of ruins the party for everyone.
Yeah.
However, I agree with you that having to log in and we are going to run into issues, I'm sure, with rental vehicles right now, less so nowadays, but you know, you do see vehicles that tend to be sort of those fleet specials, right? Lower grade in terms of like, well, that stuff is going away. You can't get a vehicle without a touchscreen now.
Right.
So, and as we go to these, you know, these systems that require login credentials, imagine you rent a car, whether it's because your car's in the shop or you're visiting somewhere, and then you have to log in order to, that's so annoying.
It's just such a bad user experience.
Yeah. And that again is one of those things that I just think like automakers need to be more cognizant of, because I think they don't see the forest for the trees, right?
It's absolutely.
You know, they go, well, think about the user experience when you log in. And it's like, but have you surveyed your owners to ask how they feel about logging in?
Do they want this?
Exactly.
Right? Like, so a lot of these safety features, like I totally understand that the intention is good, but like just as an example, you know, in-cabin cameras is becoming increasingly more common. Especially with a lot of luxury automakers. So I noticed this a lot in various BMWs that I've driven, is that they call it a selfie camera, which A, is stupid.
So dumb.
I've mentioned it on the show before, but it's also, you can access the camera through an app to see if you left anything in the backseat or whatever. And then you can also, it'll also start recording if it's triggered by the anti-theft alarm. And so from that perspective, I'm like, okay, I guess that does make sense. In case someone steals your car, you could send that information to the police or whatever. But then that makes me question, like, security, like, when's that camera on? When is it not on? Who is it sending data to? Did you opt into this? Did you consent to this?
And hacking becomes, right? You know, a big question mark, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. There are so many, you know, elements to this that are, like, exposed. To me, it's just an overcomplication that could lead to, you know, higher risk of being compromised.
Right.
I remember, you know, reading and watching about hackers that intentionally, like, they'll hack vehicles to then report back to the automakers and say, hey, listen, like, here's a big backdoor that I was able to take control of this vehicle. People have done it with Teslas.
Yeah.
That was a big one I remember with.
They were like, hire me as an engineer.
Yeah, I remember with Auto Summon or whatever they call it.
Oh.
And it was like, look, I can get into this system pretty easily and take control of anyone's vehicle. So again, this is like that idea. We're not fear mongers. We're not talking about, oh, let's go back to these primitive vehicles. We understand and appreciate technology and what it brings to the table. Safety is another big one. Look at OnStar.
Yeah.
OnStar has existed for, I don't know.
It's got to
be. Sure. It's got to be 25 years.
Yeah.
I would say it's probably a little bit longer than that, but safe estimate is 25 years. The stories, not just the marketing stories that GM uses.
Oh, yeah, like the lives they have saved using OnStar. They've delivered babies.
Yeah.
Like,
and
it's amazing.
I got to go, years ago, I went to the OnStar, like, command center, for lack of a better term. It's in Detroit. It's in the Renaissance Center, so GM's, like, headquarters. And a bunch of their, you know, operators, because when you hit the button, it goes to what you think is, like, a call center. And, I mean, technically it is. But a bunch of their operators are emergency trained. Like they have the same training as if you were to call 911.
Like a paramedic.
So they're able, no, but like they're able to talk you through. Like I'm saying a 911 operator needs specialized training. They have, a lot of their operators have the same training in order to talk you through things that you know, I'm sorry, like that if somebody called me in a panic, I'm not trained in that situation to try to stay calm and give that advice and be able to multitask, talk you through that while also dispatching, you know, first responders. So that is one of those things that it's like technology. Here's a great example of it doing amazing things.
And it works, especially because I think there are actual humans on the other side of that, right?
Yeah.
I think when you don't have that connection of like with an actual human on the other end, I think that's where it gets a little bit iffy. And the problem is right now is that there's no real safeguards, no real regulation around this kind of stuff right now.
Every OEM has their own, you know, data storage and privacy, you know, like ground rules, whatever framework. And all of them, I've read some like pretty damning reports about how they're handling it, where these servers are, that they're like kind of not unsecure, but like, again, easily hackable, accessible, and they all rate pretty poorly.
Yeah, and this is, and we're right at the cusp of being able to like pay for stuff using our cars and our accounts and stuff like that. And I can't imagine what kind of security nightmare that will be when that becomes more mainstream. So there's a lot of innovation happening, but I think it has to happen in tandem with like the right safeguards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it's not right now.
No. And it's just like you said, I guess, again, I don't want to sit here and make it sound like we're these, you know, curmudgeons and talking about things that like I get it. I understand why automakers want to do this. They want to turn they look at their vehicles as, you know, companion, like, pieces of technology.
Yeah, like your phone,
like
or
a
something.
Phone or an iPad. Like that is the outlook. But to me, it's like, but no, you're an automaker.
Yeah,
like, I don't. It's the same thing with like the reason why I'm happy to see, you know, a company like Google take over infotainment is because it's like that's what you're good at, right?
Yeah,
user interface and having. I would much rather sign into my Google account than a separate account.
For sure, because you know that Google is supposed to have taken all those safeguards already.
Well, and just regardless, it's like, yeah.
And they're experts at
but
that.
But then it's one, to me, I would rather have all of my stuff on that one account because that's also how you have people that have weaker passwords because they're like, well, it's just one more account to have.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
So it's like with it being with Google, yeah, Google security is pretty damn good from what I understand. I'm not a tech writer, but I've read good things about Google's security for account privacy. But yeah, it's just centralized, right? And sure, okay, we're just feeding the machine, but we're doing that anyways, right?
Yeah, because it's if it's convenient to us, I don't think a lot of people really care. Not that they don't care about security, but it's not top of mind. Like the
or it's
convenience
a compromise
is more
that
important.
You're willing to make that you go, look, convenience over. I would rather have good account security and know that, yeah, Google is using, like, basically the reason why everything that Google gives us is free is because that way Google can use your data, but it's anonymous data, right? For the most part. So I'm talking about like location, for example, when you fire up Google Maps, right? You are using that service. That service is using you.
Yeah.
But that is one of those things that whether we know it or not, I personally am aware of it and I don't care because I go, it's worth it for the convenience of having Google Maps with traffic data and all of that good stuff, right? And again, because it's Google, and whether you call me crazy or not, I generally tend to trust Google with my data, with my info. But yeah, when you get into this, how many different EV charging apps do you have on your phone right now?
Nine.
Right? Right. That, again, why do I need all of these different logins and all of this different technology that, you know, is exposing me to risk? I would much rather have it centralized.
Yeah.
Sounds like we've solved everything here.
I mean, it's such a complicated issue and there's really no easy solution to this.
For sure.
But the whole point of the episode is that, like, we asked the question, is in-car tech getting better or worse? And I think before it gets better, it got worse, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally.
We're in like a very interesting transition period where there's like a lot of innovation happening, sometimes at the detriment of other stuff like practicality and safety, right? So we just have to, you know, be aware of what you're signing up to.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing, the other side of it is that, you know, I guess it's like just any technology, right? Your phone, at home, whatever. But my thing is, it's the moving, you know, goalposts, for lack of a better term, when instead of committing to one thing, it's like automakers are bouncing around a lot. And that's because of technology, right? And so infotainment interfaces and all of that stuff. It wasn't too long ago that cars had CD players and LCD screens to for, you know, information. And now how many, you could probably count, this is not an exaggeration, you could probably count the number of vehicles on the market today with CD players on one hand.
If that, yeah. And I think even these days they're like hidden. Like you they're not in the dash like they used to be. Like they'll be in a glove box or something.
How about this? One of the only, speaking of, we talked about old people earlier. Let's bring it back full circle for the olds. The Subaru Legacy had an optional CD player because that customer demand was there because of the demographic that it catered to.
I mean, so there is some data to back up your speculation.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was saying. It's sort of like an educated, you know, hypothesis. It's
not
like,
just making it up. No, exactly.
It's not like a usual episode.
All right. Before our Ask an Expert segment, here is a message from your friends at Auto Trader.
Can't find a car at your ideal price point? Auto Trader is the answer. Car prices are dropping across Canada, and Auto Trader has got you covered with hundreds of thousands of cars for you to choose from. Use our price badges to find a great deal at a great price today. Visit Auto Trader for more.
Okay, today's Ask an Expert comes from Dan Bramner from Oshawa.
Ask an Expert Bramner Dan. Ask an Expert Bramner Dan.
From O-Town. Okay. One of the questions was about car culture dying. Oh, so this was on our episode of, it was just entirely asking expert questions. And someone had asked us whether or not we think car culture is dying. Yeah. So Dan says, the reason car culture is dying is connected to the price of gas and the movement towards EVs. I traded in my pseudo muscle car for an EV. Why? The price of gas was killing me. Plus, any dual motor EV is faster and quicker than a muscle car unless you sink tons of money into it. And yes, the Fast and Furious did send a car into space. And yes, it was as awful as it sounds. Thank you for producing a fun podcast about cars.
Oh, thanks, Dan. Okay, well, thanks for clarifying, because it just definitely means I don't have to watch that stupid movie now.
I'd still watch it.
I think I mentioned that. I agree with you. Like, EVs are part of it for sure. Is the price of gas part of it? I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
I think car stuff is just expensive, period, which I think blocks a lot of people from getting involved.
For sure. But young people, right? When I was a kid, it was pretty cheap to insure a car. Like when I was a teenager, it was relatively affordable. Yeah, okay, gas was cheaper than it is now. So it was, again, easy. When you're a kid and you don't have a ton of disposable income, you're making a minimum wage, you're working a few hours here and there. But when it's cheap and easy, sure, I agree. But I think that pop culture part of it is still a huge chunk of it. And yeah, totally. Like EVs, I guess the flip side of it is EVs are making it less appealing. There's less character and whatever, less reason to get involved. But then that quickness, you know, as much as it poses a risk in, especially in young hands, that has an appeal, but it hasn't really caught on.
It's still really early days, right?
But I remember writing about companies that were modifying Teslas back in like 2011.
Yeah.
Okay. So now here we are 13 years later.
Wow.
And it never really did the thing it was supposed to. And that's like put Teslas on the map as these like cool performance cars, the new like mod specials, right?
EVs, honestly, as a car person, EVs, it's a lot harder to do it for me because there's so much excitement around, you know, the driving experience has so much to do with more than just speed and more than just driving. It's like the sound. It's what it feels like. It's like all the touch points. Like it's the experience, the UX. Yeah. Like there's so much involved.
For sure.
And I feel like with EVs, I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
Totally. And I feel bad about saying that because it's not like I hate EVs because I don't. I like EVs.
No, they just
but
don't
as a car
that.
Person, it just doesn't get me excited.
But there's that's nothing to like apologize for. That's just being honest, right? It's like yeah, until it does that thing. It's, and this is like an age old, you know, kind of struggle that people have when something new. It's the same reason why people that are like, oh yeah, I loved playing guitar, or I loved listening to music when it was acoustic. And then when you know, the electric guitar was introduced and it just didn't do it for
right.
me. Or it's, to me, it's no different than me being like, I used to be a basketball mega fan, but I loved traditional basketball, right? I loved having like big men down in the paint, you know, they're just like bruising, throwing elbows, doing their thing. And then you had smaller guys out on the wing and whatever. Now it's all this positionless play. And I don't care. I couldn't tell you,
right.
you know, who's on the Raptors roster anymore, because it's just like I've lost all interest in,
yeah.
in having this generic version of the game that, sure, to some people is more exciting. That's the equivalent, right?
Yep.
It's quicker now. It's the EV of basketball. We've entered that era, but it doesn't do it for me.
I mean, and part of why I think what gets a lot of car people going is like a tactile analog experience, yeah. right? And analog is seeing a huge resurgence right now because people are just simply so tired of being connected all the time.
Like, they're analog. Huh? I think like a fake, like, because nobody is actually like, it's, people like the idea of being analog.
Yeah, but for me, it's like, you know, I'll go out and buy a record, for example, like a vinyl record,
yeah.
and I love listening to it, but I won't ever stream that music, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because it's part of the experience, right?
I mean, yeah, I get it. But my point is still like, you know, when you found that record, did you tweet about it? Did you post? You know what I mean? Like, so it's this pseudo analog state.
Right.
That it's like people crave this like momentary
yeah.
detachment from like
yeah.
technology, but it's like your phone's still in your pocket while you're listening to that.
Yeah, that's true
record,
too.
You know, so
I do think there has to be like a big pop culture moment to help bring cars back.
Yeah.
I think, you know, with Netflix doing Drive to Survive and like all that F1 stuff, it really helped. I think it's like people who I know who don't give a crap about cars
yeah.
all of a sudden super into F1.
Well, that's what I was gonna say, like F1 in particular. So that worked for F1, and now like
NASCAR
is doing
one?
But I think you're right. It's like we need that just about like car culture, not right, because F1 is like kind of pompous and
it's
like,
very specific. But what surprised me about it was that people who do not care about motorsports or cars were super invested.
But they care about F1. I'm saying we need that
yeah.
replicated in just day-to-day car culture.
Yeah.
That's
like a really accessible, like fun,
yeah.
relatable type
yeah.
show that we should host, honestly.
Yeah.
We can make our stuff simple
right.
On Netflix.
Done.
Our next question comes from Right Lane Hog slash Mike, who
Mike,
is a loyal
up?
Supporter.
Mike is the man. Mike, we appreciate you so much, man. Like, you, honestly, we love engaging with you. We love that, you know, you're constantly asking us questions. You're challenging us. We do better because of you and people like you, man. Like, honestly, we really do appreciate you.
Yeah, Mike asks a lot of very well thought out, intelligent
Absolutely.
Questions. Honestly, every time we post a video on our YouTube channel, which you should all subscribe to, please. He's like one of the first people
always.
To comment. It's
yeah.
always a great comment. So
yeah.
He recently wrote a letter to Toyota Canada to ask them a couple questions.
Okay.
One of them had to do with the upcoming Crown Signia.
Oh.
So he says, we are getting closer and closer to the arrival of the Crown Signia SUV.
Yeah.
What will it take to get Toyota Canada to offer us the cheaper XLE trim as well as the limited? So right now, the Crown Signia is only going to be offered in Canada in the top trim,
yeah.
which means more expensive.
Yeah.
Mike would love to see a lower trim, more affordable option
mm-hmm.
Without, you know, a sunroof and with smaller rims, because
okay.
he lives in like a really potholed place and big rims just don't work for him, right?
Okay.
So his argument is that a cheaper one would suit, would be more suitable for many more Canadian drivers.
I don't disagree, but I think, you know, to justify the cost of bringing this vehicle to Canada, it's very, homologation is expensive. And yes, you know, we can lean on the states. So with crash testing, fuel economy testing, all of that stuff, we have, you know, harmonized standards, but still there's processes that cost a lot of money with the government to get a vehicle, you know, registered for sale in Canada. So I think Toyota needs to sell the more expensive one based on the volume. If volume was going to be higher, so there's always a chance that if this Crown Signia just explodes in popularity, then Toyota might go, cool, we got to bring the XLE to Canada. But right now that would be the reason why we're only getting the top trim. I will say though, Mike, I don't know. I'm sure you've already read up on this. Man, it's so, I haven't driven it yet, but it's so cool. And I sat in it with so much, like, I was so nervous because I love the Crown Sedan, can't really fit in it all that well. So I was worried that I was going to run into the same issues that I had in this RAV4 Prime I drove last week. You know, my head is right at the header of the windshield. And I got in and I was like, man, I just like slink right into this thing. And it's so like, I sit low, but I still have great view. I love it. I can't wait to drive it. So Mike, let's buy some. And then that'll encourage Toyota to bring a cheaper one to Canada.
But Mike, I also want to commend you for taking the time to write Toyota Canada a letter, because honestly, people like these corporations won't know unless you give them that feedback.
Exactly.
And so I think that's really important that you did that. So good job, Mike.
And if you don't get a response from Toyota, I'd encourage you to email Danielle Petricelli directly. She's great. She loves getting, you know,
love her
tough questions. So we can make sure to make that happen too. Maybe we'll start a campaign and we'll just like bombard her with Crown Signia emails.
I mean, if Canada wants a cheaper Crown Signia, that's the only way to do it, right?
What about Danada? What Danada wants, Danada gets.
Danada.
A cheaper Crown Signia.
Oh, Danada. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Mike and Dan Bramner, for your questions. If any of you would like to ask Dan or I questions, you can email expert@trader.ca. And that wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Please make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Instagram and TikTok. And we would love if you left a review for this podcast, because
it
might help us reach more people.
Okay.
And we want to make car stuff simple for many more Canadians.
Wow.
So drive safe, and we'll catch you the next episode.
Bye, guys.